The topic of today's lecture is mental health and illness. First, let's talk about some of the myths and misconceptions that have traditionally surrounded the condition of mental illness. Throughout history, people with mental illness have been considered strange and different. Yet people with mental illness are often more like the rest of us than different. Behavior that is different and strange is not necessarily abnormal. Furthermore, what is considered acceptable and unacceptable behavior differs from one culture to another and even changes over time within a culture. A common misconception is that people with mental illness are prone to violent behavior and are, therefore, dangerous. Generally speaking, the public fears what it doesn't understand. If a mental illness causes a person to behave in bizarre or strange ways, people become afraid of, or at least uncomfortable around, people who are mentally ill. Some people fear violent behavior, but it is often the abnormal behavior that a person with mental illness exhibits that provokes fear. As a result of myths and misconceptions, there is a great deal of stigma attached to mental illness. A stigma is a negative perception of someone or something. Stigma can sometimes be openly exhibited. At other times, it is expressed in subtle ways. Regardless, a stigma is associated with shame or ridicule within a society. When someone is stigmatized, he or she is made to feel unaccepted and devalued, and is often isolated from and shunned by the larger society. Before we talk further about mental illness, it is important to consider the condition of mental health. After that, we'll talk about mental illness, a broad term that encompasses a wide spectrum or continuum of psychiatric disorders, ranging from less disabling to more severe in intensity. Last, we will discuss the roles and activities of the psychiatric nurse in providing care for clients with mental illness. Mental health is a positive state. When we say that someone is mentally healthy, it means that he or she meets certain conditions. According to Foundations of Psychiatric Mental Health Nursing, people who are mentally healthy take responsibility for their own actions. They are able to think clearly, use good judgment, and solve problems. Mentally healthy people are aware of their emotional and physical states. They cope effectively with the tensions and stresses of daily living and are able to handle or manage challenges. Mentally healthy people function well in groups, in a family, and in society in general, and they tend to be accepted within those groups. They tend to be satisfied with their lives. They enjoy life and have the ability to find pleasure in living. And they typically fulfill the capacity for love and work. Many factors influence one's mental health. First, we inherit characteristics or genes from our parents. Our genetic makeup influences how we cope with life. Our temperament and cognitive abilities are both affected by our genetic makeup and influence how we cope with life. Do you know someone who is always upbeat and positive, someone who has a very positive view of life? That is someone who has a very positive temperament. On the other hand, do you know someone who is negative all the time? The negative person will see a glass that is partially filled with water as half empty, whereas the positive person will see it as half full. Temperament relates to both our general outlook on life and the development of our personality. In addition to temperament, our cognitive abilities also influence our mental health, and again, these are partially determined by our genes. Cognitive here means our thinking abilities, processing information, knowing, learning, understanding, and making judgments, all of which influence how mentally healthy we are. Besides inherited characteristics, the nurturing received during childhood influences one's mental health. We know from many scientific studies that those first few days, weeks, and years of life are very important. The infant needs to bond with the mother and father. This is very important. We also know that the interactions children have with family members as they grow and develop are critical in terms of mental health. The influence of support by an extended family can also be a factor in one's mental health. In some cultures, the extended family lives together, or they live near each other. In some cases, having extended family members around can have a positive influence on a person's mental health, and in times of stress, extended family members can provide support for one another. However, in other cultures, such as the American culture, grandparents and other relatives may live in other states and may not be able to easily provide support. Americans without family members near them may rely on friends or professionals for support instead. The last factor that influences mental health is basic life circumstances. Both positive and negative life events can impact or influence our mental health. Witnessing traumatic events, such as tragedies during war, or having to leave one's home because of war, as in the case of refugees, can have a negative impact on one's mental health. Something that can help you better understand mental health is the perspective of human needs. Abraham Maslow was an American psychologist whose most noted contribution to psychology was his hierarchy of needs. This hierarchy provides a good model for understanding the role of needs in the development and maintenance of mental health. When individuals are able to get these needs met, they are more likely to be mentally healthy. Likewise, mentally healthy individuals are more likely to be able to get their needs met. Maslow's hierarchy represents human needs in the shape of a pyramid. At the bottom of the pyramid are physiologic needs, the most basic level of human needs. What are the absolute necessities that we need for life to continue? First, we need oxygen. We have to have oxygen to breathe. Then, we need food and water. Once we have our most basic survival needs met, then we need to feel safe. The next level of need is safety and security. We need to be free of danger, free of harm. We need shelter. Think about refugees in relation to this level. They flee their homeland because their safety and security needs are not being met. The next level is love, or the need for love and belonging. These needs are harder to determine. They are not like food and water. We have a need for affection and for a feeling of belonging. We fulfill these needs through our relationships with family and others. Going higher on the pyramid, the next level is self-esteem. Self-esteem is an individual's feeling regarding his or her value and worth as a human being. It is the need to feel that we are loved, that we are important to others, that we are well thought of by others, that we have something to offer. These last two levels of hierarchy, the need for love and belonging and self-esteem, frequently go unmet for people with mental illness. The more basic needs, physiological and safety security, are the strongest ones and must be satisfied before a person can fulfill higher-level needs. As a result, persons with mental illness are often unable to get all their needs met, which can make the illness worse. Likewise, when individuals are not able to get their needs met, they may be at greater risk than the average person for developing a mental illness. The very tip of the pyramid is self-actualization, or need to reach our full potential and be self-fulfilled. According to Maslow, few human beings reach this level. Only people who have reached their highest human potential achieve self-actualization. So, how do individuals maintain their mental health? Or, using Maslow's hierarchy of needs, how do individuals make sure their needs are met? There are many ways. One way is through our relationships with other people. Interpersonal relationships, as well as our communication skills with others, are important. People who are mentally healthy usually have healthy relationships, and they communicate effectively with others. From my practice in nursing, I know that people with mental illness often have difficulties communicating or relating effectively with others. The symptoms of mental illness interfere with the development of healthy interpersonal relationships. For example, in individuals who suffer from depression, feelings of worthlessness and guilt are pervasive. As a result, these individuals tend to withdraw and isolate themselves, avoiding contact with others. Having a strong support system is also very important to mental health. Support systems may include family and friends, people who can help when a challenge or difficulty arises. Other support systems can include school counselors or spiritual advisors in churches, mosques, temples, or synagogues. Psychiatrists, psychiatric nurses, and other healthcare providers can also be important resources in a person's support system. The larger the support system, the more likely the client will receive adequate mental health care. Another key to maintaining mental health is to have our own strategies for coping with stress in daily life. One strategy is exercise. How does exercise keep us healthy? It keeps us physically healthy, but how does it relate to our mental health? When we exercise, endorphins, which are a certain chemical in our bodies, are activated. Endorphins make us feel better. They help decrease depression or negative feelings, and we often feel good about ourselves for actually taking the time to exercise. Exercise also helps to relieve stress. A healthy diet can also help maintain mental health, as can stress management techniques, relaxation, and getting enough sleep. Other ways of coping that help us stay mentally healthy include prayer and meditation and complementary therapies. Complementary therapies are healthcare strategies that are not usually prescribed by a doctor, such as massage, acupuncture, use of herbs, that can help us maintain balance in our lives. Also effective is putting one's feelings on paper by writing in a diary or a journal. Now that we've looked at mental health, let's look more closely at mental illness. The term mental illness is often used interchangeably in the literature with mental disorder. However, mental illness is used more often in the general sense and mental disorder to refer to specific illnesses. The term disorder is also used in the classification of mental illnesses in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, also referred to as the DSM-4. The standard reference for information about mental illness. Mental disorders are defined in Foundations of Psychiatric Mental Health Nursing as clinically significant behavioral or psychological syndromes or patterns that are associated with distress or disability. Distress refers to any symptom that causes psychic or physical pain. Disability refers to impairment in one or more areas of functioning. Mental disorders are characterized by some form of dysfunction or deficit in the functioning of the individual, whether behavioral, psychological, or biological. A deficit means the person has problems participating or fulfilling activities or functions of daily living. Difficulties with work, either holding a job or keeping a job. Deficits or difficulties with relationships or with family or a support system. Or problems functioning at school. Individuals with mental illness have trouble facing and maintaining their current living situation. Sometimes working is not possible because functioning in a healthy, effective way is impaired. We know that people with mental illness are often unable to view themselves clearly or even rationally. They may have very poor self-esteem, and they may have difficulty determining where they fit into the general scheme of life and family. As mentioned earlier, people with mental illness have difficulty maintaining their relationships and relating to others in a healthy way. Some of that is related to their disease, which damages their perception or view of things. They also have trouble or an inability to adapt to their environment. We all have to face changes as we grow and develop, But people with mental illness have difficulty dealing with change in life. They may also have trouble adapting to the work environment. So, what causes mental illness? First, let's answer this question from the perspective of the American culture and healthcare system. Chemical imbalance is the first cause. This has been the focus of a lot of recent scientific research. We know that in the brain there are neurotransmitters, chemical messengers that help the brain function in healthy ways. We know that people with mental disorders often have deficits or problems in the way their brain functions. In some disorders, there are not enough neurotransmitters. In other disorders, there are too many neurotransmitters. So we know that there is an imbalance or incorrect functioning involving neurotransmitters in the brains of individuals suffering from mental disorders. The more scientists learn about mental illness, the more likely they are going to find that there are organic causes. What are organic causes? Organic means pertaining to an organ, in this case, the brain. It is something within the brain that is changing or malfunctioning, or is not typical, that is creating the symptoms of mental illness. Organic causes or changes in the brain mean that the brain looks different or functions differently when the person suffers from a mental illness. Mental illness is also influenced by hereditary factors, the inherited characteristics discussed earlier. We know that certain disorders are passed on through the generations. A well-known inherited mental disorder is bipolar disorder. It is a common mood disorder. Scientific research has recently discovered the exact genes and chromosomes implicated in this disease. This information about causation helps people suffering from this disorder know that it is not their fault, that they or their actions are not the cause of their mental illness. Instead, causation is due to their genetic makeup. Childhood experiences are also very important in the development of mental disorders, especially for children who have lived in an environment where there has been a lot of abuse or trauma. Such experiences will negatively affect these children as they develop. Life circumstances, such as homelessness, can also lead to or factor into the development of a mental illness. Culture plays a major role in the perception of and response to mental illness. First of all, let's define what is meant by culture. Culture is defined in basic concepts of psychiatric mental health nursing as a set of shared beliefs, values, behavioral norms, and practices that are common to a group of people with a common identity and language. Cultural as well as religious beliefs inform people's knowledge about and attitude toward mental illness. Cultures differ in their understanding of mental illness and in their beliefs regarding its origins. Based on these different beliefs, cultures also differ in their responses to mental illness. Some cultures view mental illness as a spiritual concern or a supernatural event. In some Asian cultures, such as the Hmong people, people believe mental illness is caused by spirits who have been offended or by the loss of one's soul. In these cultures, the remedy is to bring in a shaman or healer or a religious leader to appease or calm the spirits that have been offended. Some African cultures and some African Americans view mental illness as a spell or a hex that has been used against a person that leads to the development of his or her mental illness. In some Hispanic cultures, particularly in Central and South America, mental illness is viewed as a punishment from God for bad behavior or as caused by evil spirits. People rely heavily on their Christian or Roman Catholic beliefs for treatment. Treatment through Western medicine is sought, but prayer, confession, and praying the rosary are also used. Catholic rituals are sometimes used to help a person get better as well. Many Muslims believe in jinn, the invisible spiritual beings that are the forces of good and evil. As an example, a few years ago, a young Somali man with a mental illness was killed by the police in Minneapolis. Spiritual leaders in the Somali culture, who are called imams, were called in to broker or negotiate between the community and the officials. The imams were quoted in a newspaper article saying that this man had received some hospital treatment for his mental illness as well as medication, but he had also received some spiritual treatment, which involved having the Quran, or the Muslim holy book, recited over him. The imams believed that by reading the Quran to him, the evil jinn could be driven away. Another perception of mental illness that is culturally influenced is mental illness as an imbalance or disharmony in nature. Many Native Americans view illness as intricately tied to the natural world. In some Asian cultures, such as the Chinese culture, mental illness is viewed as the result of an imbalance of some sort. The Chinese culture believes in something called qi. Qi is an all-pervasive life force that flows in our bodies that keeps us balanced, and any kind of blockage to qi or to this life force can cause pain and disease. If you look at the yin-yang symbol in Chinese culture, there are two parts, one black and the other white. They are in perfect balance. The yin is the black part and represents the female, cold, and darkness. The yang, which is white, represents the male, warmth, and light. I once heard about a Laotian immigrant who refused to take red and yellow pills because she believed that her disease was caused by too much heat in her body. So she wanted a blue pill because blue has a cooling effect. This woman was trying to restore balance in her body. In most cultures, families try traditional healers first to treat mental illness. They do not seek out Western medical care right away. This makes sense because traditional healers will speak the family's language and will come into their homes. Physicians won't come into homes in America. Some nurses do, but doctors don't. Coming to a home is important for families in non-Western cultures. Healers are often less expensive than medical doctors, which is an important concern in the United States since medical care is so expensive. When someone who doesn't speak English seeks out Western medicine or health care in the United States, interpreters are needed. Communication is vital when it comes to providing effective psychiatric services. But sometimes, in translating from English to the native language, there are just no words in a particular language that can be substituted. One example is the word schizophrenia. There is no such word in the Hmong language to describe schizophrenia. As a result, sometimes translation is very difficult, which impairs or becomes a problem in communication. Often children in a family are relied on to translate, but that can create all sorts of problematic situations around privacy and confidentiality, which are really important issues in nursing and healthcare. No matter what culture a person comes from, the individual seeking mental health care will certainly face challenges. A stigma against mental illness is still common in American culture, as in many traditional cultures. This stigma against mental illness is still prevalent in American culture. This stigma can be very destructive to someone who has just been diagnosed with a mental illness. Families can also suffer from the stigma that is attached to a family member being diagnosed with a mental disorder. Although families can play a very important and supportive role for family members needing or seeking mental health care, they can also be a detriment, especially if they refuse to get counseling that has been recommended for family members. There are many types of psychiatric disorders that you will learn about as part of your nursing education. One type is mood disorders. Mood is defined in Foundations of Psychiatric Mental Health Nursing as a pervasive and sustained emotion that can influence the way an individual perceives the world. One type of mood disorder is depression or major depressive disorder, which is characterized by a depressed mood most of the day, nearly every day. Other symptoms include the inability to experience pleasure, significant weight loss or gain, inability to sleep or sleeping too much, decreased motor activity, loss of energy, feelings of worthlessness, decreased concentration, and recurrent thoughts of death. Bipolar disorder, another type of mood disorder, refers to a client having both depression and mania. Depression we have defined, but what is mania? According to Foundations of Psychiatric Mental Health Nursing, mania is an elevated mood that is characterized by delusion and poor judgment. A person with mania usually thinks, talks, and moves quickly, and often engages in high-risk behavior. Suicide is another area of psychiatric nursing that you will become familiar with in nursing education. Suicide is a behavior, not a disorder. Nevertheless, it is relevant to psychiatric nursing, and nurses must continually assess for suicidal thinking and suicidal behavior to keep clients safe. Suicidal thinking very often occurs when individuals are suffering from major depressive disorder. Cultures have different views on the issue of suicide and how best to respond to it. For example, a student from Ethiopia once approached me after a lecture on suicide and informed me that asking someone if he or she is thinking of committing suicide is unacceptable in his culture. I explained to him that in the nursing profession in the United States, nurses are legally obligated to specifically ask people at risk of committing suicide whether they want to kill themselves, and we have to document it in the charts. It is part of our standard of practice of being a psychiatric nurse in the United States. While all nursing students may find it difficult to ask such questions, some nursing students come from cultures where asking personal questions of this nature is unacceptable. For these students, having a firm understanding of the standards of psychiatric nursing care that guide our practice, legally and ethically, may help in overcoming cultural barriers in addressing these issues with clients. Maintaining client safety is always the top priority in U.S. nursing care, particularly when suicide is a possibility, and somehow must supersede any cultural concerns. In addition to mood disorders, there are several types of anxiety disorders. Anxiety is a general feeling of uncertainty or dread. The source of anxiety is either unknown or unrecognized. Anxiety is a normal response to threatening situations. However, it can become a problem when it interferes with normal everyday functioning in one's personal, social, or professional life. Anxiety disorders include general anxiety disorder, obsessive-compulsive disorder, and post-traumatic stress disorder. General anxiety disorder is defined in Foundations of Psychiatric Mental Health Nursing as excessive anxiety or worry about numerous things that lasts for 6 months or longer. Obsessive-compulsive disorder is characterized by both obsessions and compulsions. Obsessions are thoughts, impulses, or recurring images that cannot be dismissed from the mind. Compulsions are ritualistic behaviors that an individual feels compelled to perform in an attempt to reduce anxiety. Because these behaviors only temporarily reduce anxiety, the individual needs to repeat the act over and over again. Although some compulsions may be considered normal or even valued, such as timeliness, orderliness, and reliability in American culture, such compulsive behavior becomes pathological if it interferes with normal routines of everyday life, as well as social activities and relationships with others. Post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD, involves the re-experience of highly traumatic events for an individual. Such recurring experiences, called flashbacks, can interfere with sleep, the person's ability to work, and often leads to high levels of anxiety. Thought disorders are characterized by alterations or changes in thinking. Schizophrenia is a type of thought disorder. It is characterized by severe disturbance of thought and loosely connected ideas, an inability to distinguish reality from delusions, and limited or impaired ability to interact with others. Individuals with schizophrenia may exhibit rather bizarre behavior related to thinking that is not based in reality. They have delusions or hear voices that others don't hear, and they may respond to those voices. There has been a lot of media attention in recent years on schizophrenia that has resulted in some people, including nursing students, feeling uncomfortable with or frightened by this group of clients. Another type of psychiatric disorder is substance dependency disorder. In psychiatric nursing, we talk a lot about chemical dependency, about alcoholism and drug abuse. In American culture and healthcare today, we consider substance dependency to be a psychiatric disorder. Eating disorders are yet another disorder. However, they are not considered to be specific diseases, but syndromes because of the cluster or pattern of symptoms they present. Eating disorders are disturbances in eating behavior characterized by voluntary starvation, binge eating, and/or purging. They have been most frequently seen in Western industrialized cultures. However, there has been a recent increase in eating disorders in non-Western cultures due to media influence. Likewise, eating disorders can affect people from different cultures living in the United States. For example, a Hmong student informed me that if she were to go back to the refugee camps in Thailand, she would be envied because of her size, because it would signify that she now has enough to eat. However, in American culture, she perceives herself as being overweight. Although she did not seem overweight, she was bigger than she used to be in the refugee camp, and as a young woman trying to fit into American culture, she had become very aware of and overly critical of her body size and shape. Another group of mental disorders is personality disorders. A personality disorder is defined in Foundations of Psychiatric Mental Health Nursing as an enduring pattern of inner experience and behavior that deviates markedly from the expectation of the individual's culture. This behavior is long-term and inflexible, begins in adolescence or early adulthood, is stable over time, and usually leads to an inability to establish intimate relationships with others. There are many different types of personality disorders, but basically, people with personality disorders have personalities that set them apart from the majority of individuals in their culture by causing difficulties in loving and working. Examples of personality disorders are antisocial personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, and obsessive-compulsive personality disorder. Many people with personality disorders have a history of abuse or trauma. Today, we have more information than ever before about psychiatric disorders, thanks to the many discoveries that have been made since the 1990s. Thanks to new technology, we can actually see what is happening in the brain of someone who is mentally healthy versus someone who struggles with mental illness. For example, in the brain of a depressed person, there is a decrease in the number of certain neurotransmitters, so the brain doesn't function right. On a PET, or positron emission tomography scan, the depressed brain looks much darker because neurotransmitters are not firing correctly. In a person who is not depressed, the neurotransmitters work or fire correctly. So on a scan, the brain shows up as much brighter. So we can actually see on a brain scan the difference between someone who is depressed and someone who is not. We can also see differences in brain scans of people with and without schizophrenia. In a set of images of identical twins, one who has schizophrenia and one who does not, it's possible to see differences, especially in the frontal lobe of the brains. In the twin who has schizophrenia, the frontal lobe looks different compared to the scan of the unaffected twin. It shows up as a darker area. In the brain of the twin who does not have schizophrenia, brighter colors appear in the frontal lobe area, indicating greater activity and functioning. You can also actually see differences in the size and volume of the brain. Bigger openings and spaces appear in the brain of the twin with schizophrenia, so we can tell from a brain scan that people with schizophrenia have lost some of the volume of their brain. What we're not sure of is if the schizophrenia caused that loss of volume or whether the loss of volume caused the schizophrenia. That's the piece we don't know yet. To sum up, In talking about the causation of psychiatric disorders, there seems to be an interaction between genetics and the environment. You can't say that there's just one single cause for the development of a mental illness. It's just too complex. There are various treatments that are used to control the symptoms of mental disorders. Some of the treatments in the United States rely a lot on talk therapy. In American society, it is believed that people will get better from their mental illness if they talk about it. They are encouraged to talk about their feelings, concerns, and issues, either individually or in group or family therapy. This belief in talk therapies is not widely held outside the United States. Many cultures do not regard this as a way for a mentally ill person to get better. It is very important to respect these differences of opinion based on culture in the treatment of clients. There are many types of psychotropic medications that are used to treat psychiatric disorders. Psychotropic is a term that is used to refer to medications that have an effect on brain function, behavior, and experience. They include antidepressants or medications that treat people who are suffering from various kinds of depression. Mood stabilizers are another. There are also antipsychotic drugs that are used to treat people with schizophrenia and anti-anxiety drugs to treat people suffering from anxiety disorders. Sometimes behavior becomes unsafe on a psychiatric unit, and we need to seclude persons by putting them in a room by themselves so that they can try to calm down. Or, in very severe and rare cases, we actually have to restrain them to the bed because they are a danger either to themselves or to other people. These measures cause a lot of discomfort for people, but are sometimes necessary. Electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, is another treatment that many hospitals use. ECT sends an electrical current into the patient's body through electrodes that are applied to the temples on either side of a patient's head. The current causes a seizure in the body. To minimize seizure activity and prevent damage to bones and vertebrae, a muscle relaxant is given to the patient before ECT. How ECT works is not completely understood, but its effectiveness in the treatment of depression has been well substantiated. So now that we have looked at mental health and various mental disorders, let's talk about the role of psychiatric nurses. Psychiatric nursing is a specialty area within the profession of nursing. The role of psychiatric nurses is providing care for people with mental illness. When we talk about psychiatric nursing care, we talk about providing care along the mental health, mental illness continuum that was previously mentioned. We provide care for people at one end of the continuum who are suffering from severe mental illness, and those at the other end of the continuum, people who are suffering from mental illness that is chronic, but not so severe that it affects their functioning. Psychiatric nurses operate in a variety of settings, providing care for clients in various conditions along this continuum. When someone is very sick with a psychiatric disorder, he or she is often hospitalized, and in many hospitals, that means the person is admitted to a locked unit. For clients, that means there is no coming and going. This is done because of safety reasons for clients and others. As symptoms improve, the client may be moved to a subacute or care facility in the community where there is more freedom. As a person improves even more, there are rehabilitation services that can be received either in the hospital or in the broader community. Sometimes diseases, such as schizophrenia, can be very chronic. People live with the disease the rest of their lives, and so even as they function to their highest ability, they may still need community mental health services from a nurse. Psychiatric nurses work in home care programs. They work in day treatment programs. They work in residential programs, such as a large apartment building, which can house many people with chronic mental illnesses. Psychiatric nurses are also involved in providing aftercare and rehabilitation services. In addition to operating in different settings, psychiatric nurses also perform a variety of roles in caring for clients. These roles are very typical of those that nurses provide in any area of nursing. First, nurses provide direct care to clients. They do both physical and psychiatric assessments, and they administer and provide education about medications. Psychiatric nurses use communication as a therapeutic tool in providing client care. Psychiatric nurses also manage the milieu. The milieu refers to the environment of the psychiatric facility, the layout of the unit, the way the furniture is arranged and the colors are used, the schedule of events and activities on the unit, etc. The environment is deliberately planned to be therapeutic. The nurse is very involved in milieu planning and management. Nurses also frequently assume the role of educator and teach about disease management, health promotion, and preventative care. They teach clients about their disorders, about medications, including side effects to watch for, and about dealing with emergencies and crises. In coordinating the care in hospital settings, nurses are the only professionals that staff units 24 hours a day. Other members of the healthcare team are there during the day, but nursing is there throughout the day and night. Nurses also act as advocates for clients and the clients' families. They advocate for clients' legal rights and refer them to appropriate services in the community. Nurses also collaborate with other healthcare professionals, such as physicians, social workers, occupational therapists, counselors, and chaplains or other religious or spiritual counselors. Nurses are active members of the healthcare team. And finally, nurses are involved in research. They utilize research findings to improve the care they give, often participating in the research process itself. What specifically do psychiatric nurses do in providing care to clients with mental illness? As nurses, we use communication to build therapeutic relationships with our clients. While all areas of nursing strive to build relationships with clients, it is especially important for psychiatric nurses to build trust with clients to help them cope more effectively with their illness. Psychiatric nurses perform both physical and psychiatric assessments on clients. Psychiatric assessments involve assessing the client's mood, thoughts, and behaviors that may relate to the client's particular psychiatric disorder. One-to-one interactions are another important part of a psychiatric nurse's duties. This is when a nurse sits down with a client to form and develop a therapeutic relationship. While she or he is talking with the client, the nurse is assessing the client's psychosocial status, picking up on symptoms of the mental disorder that become obvious during the conversation. Having one-to-one interactions also helps the nurse assess how well the client is coping or improving. It is also during one-to-one interactions that nurses can provide education, advocacy, and referrals. Psychiatric nurses also perform group therapy, a nursing activity involving facilitation of a group of clients who come together to talk and support one another. During group therapy, the nurse often provides education. One of the most important activities of the psychiatric nurse is administering medication. It is very important for nurses in this specialty field to be very well informed about medications and their side effects. Many of the medications that are used to treat mental illness have very uncomfortable side effects. Psychiatric nurses constantly monitor the extent of these side effects so they can intervene promptly when they interfere with overall health. Psychiatric nurses also need to be aware of laws and regulations in the state where they practice that may affect the treatment of persons with mental disorders. One such law is the 72-hour hold. This is an emergency measure used to hold individuals in a locked psychiatric unit for 72 hours if they exhibit very specific criteria. The most basic of these criteria is that the person is determined to be a danger to him or herself or to others. This determination is usually made by a psychiatrist. During the 72-hour hold, the staff on the locked unit can further assess the person and provide psychiatric treatment. If a person continues to struggle with their mental disorder for long periods of time, psychiatric treatment may be mandated through a court commitment. Sometimes such a commitment means that the person stays in a hospital setting. Other times, he or she may still be affected by the court commitment, but they may reside in the community, living in an apartment or at home. The commitment process mandates that a healthcare team monitor the client to be sure he or she is taking the medication and complying with treatment. A court commitment usually lasts for up to 6 months. In recent years, there has been a lot of media attention around police and the manner in which they deal with situations in the community involving people with mental illness. Historically, police have received very little training in dealing with people who have mental illness, particularly if the mentally ill are from other cultures. However, recently there has been more emphasis on training police officers on how to deal more effectively with cases involving people with mental illness, providing officers with strategies to help diffuse and decrease the danger of the situation without resorting to force. These strategies often involve ways of talking to and calming the individual and getting him or her to a place where the medical care that is needed can be obtained. In conclusion, psychiatric nursing is a very interesting specialty area of nursing. It's a specialty area that I find fascinating because of the many ways in which illness can change behavior so much. Even after being a psychiatric nurse for many years, I still feel energized when I think about working with mentally ill people. However, psychiatric nursing is an area of nursing practice that is often misunderstood. I have colleagues who tell me outright that they could never be a psychiatric nurse. But I know that I could never be a pediatric nurse because I'd have trouble caring for children who are ill. That's the beauty of nursing. There are so many areas in which you can practice. There are going to be areas that you are going to be uncomfortable with, that you know you would have a hard time working in. But then there are other areas that you are going to feel really comfortable with, and you'll say to yourself, "Oh, this feels right for me." So keep your minds open about all the experiences you'll have in your nursing program, including experiences with mentally ill clients. Who knows? Maybe psychiatric nursing will be what feels right for you.